Insider. This is your host, Brett Williams. And today on the show, it's Dale Kavanaugh. Dale Kavanaugh is a magnificent guitarist and just as good of a composer. Her music is I had kind of forgotten how much that informed sort of... when I heard her 2007 album with a couple of her preludes and etudes on it, back then... it was around that time because she was at Manus the same year that Giacomo and I played at the symposium. So that would have been like 2008 or 2009. So around that time, she released this album. I know when she released it. It was 2007 because we talked about it. But that album has some of her compositions on it. And it is exactly what I want compositions to sound like. So I'm going to go ahead and play her music. I purchased it and I'm going to maybe work it up, and I don't know. That would be the first thing that I played that I haven't written in years, 5 years. So played like, you know, and presented. So maybe I think that that's going to happen. I'm just really excited about it. It was great to be reminded about how great those pieces are. And as luck would have it, she's going to grace us with a recording of her volume one of original pieces is coming out at the end of the month. So this is perfect. I did this interview maybe last week. It should be soon, I think she says. She says in the thing, but you can, you know, she says at the end of the episode, which is amazing. It's amazing how humble she is. Maybe it's because she's Canadian. I don't know. But she doesn't have all the pomp of some of the other people that are in her position. So... a wonderful person. And I didn't do that well with this interview. I kind of shat the bed, if you will. I didn't know that she was married to her duo partner. Tom? I didn't know about that. And I look like an idiot when I do that. But isn't that important? That's important to sort of... admit when you don't know something, you know. I could just delete it, and then you guys could think I'm smart. But you know who would know I deleted it is her, and I don't want her to think that I'm a liar, because what's worse than not being smart is being a liar. And we are sponsored by SavageClassical.com. All right? Don't lie. Don't worry about being smart. Definitely don't worry about being cool. And go to Savage.com. SavageClassical.com. That's SAVAGE classical.com, savageclassical.com for all the best guitars. His collection is massive. I know you guys are going out there and helping him out because he signed up for another year. On the last episode, we talked about that. I am excited to be affiliated with that guy. So Richard over there will hook you up with the guitar of your dreams. Make sure you tell him that I sent you. Big Diaper Brett sent me, and he will, I don't know what he'll do. Just let them know. Let them know for me. It's the only way I make money. You guys can actually maybe help out with that. All right? I'm going to go ahead and put dangle something out there, and I'll see if you guys bite. But basically, and I do this for friends, as you've heard on episodes. They come to the intro, and they talk about, or sometimes once in a while, especially back in the day when there weren't as many podcasts. I think right now I'm just sort of in a giant stew bowl of billions of podcasts out there, whereas before guitar podcast, it was like me and a couple other people. So sometimes a publisher will call me with somebody out of genre, and I'll feature them in the intro. I'm sure you've heard these. And other times a friend will call up and be like, how much for, you know, a spot in the intro? You can do that too. You just write me at Brett@BrettWilliamsMusic.com. That's B-R-E-T at BrettWilliamsMusic.com. You can help out the show. It's not expensive. I'm not going to tell you how much it is because it's a little slighting. If you're 20, I'm going to cut you a big deal. or whatever. I want to help. So, you know, it's preferably something you can afford, but also I have to balance that with the fact that it is taking time out of my day to do this at all. Like this isn't, it is now noon on a Thursday and I have to teach all evening long. And I have another interview with Alexandra Whittingham after, like, at in 45 minutes. And I need to practice more. And I had to do my taxes yesterday. So I'm taking time to do this. So I hope you guys understand this isn't like, this is easy, I guess, but it's time consuming. We're talking several hours to produce an episode. So with that in mind, you can help out. I promise it won't be too expensive. Okay? What's this? Oh, okay. Oh, I got to take a trip with my girlfriend. I do. I am so anti-trip. She just texted. I should turn the thing off for now, but she is texting when she wants to go to New Orleans before I go to camp. And I got to go. I got to take a trip. I got to take more trips, right? I got to travel more for, right? Because that makes me a better person. It doesn't make you a better person. It just means you have a bunch of money. So calm down on that. All right. It doesn't make you more worldly. Well, I guess it does technically make you more worldly when you travel. But she wants to take a trip. What was I talking about? So I got to deal with that after this too. See, I got a lot of stuff to do. I got to like plan a trip to New Orleans in the next 45 minutes, finish this intro, and then boom, I'm in it with Alexander Whittingham. You can help out. Brett at BrettWilliamsMusic.com. You can also just donate if you want to donate and you don't want anything in return. There's nothing wrong with that. That's BrettWilliamsMusic.com/support. I'm running out of breath here. Now I'm starting to stress out. She actually said in the text, she's like, I don't want to stress you out, but we should talk about that trip. And she's right. Did I mention that Dale Cavanaugh comes up with an album at the end of the month of her original music? If I didn't, that's huge. That's what perfect timing. I think that the reason that I wasn't, you will hear that I'm not all there during this interview. I forget things. I kind of like, I don't know what it is, but I think I just had bad allergies that day. I kind of have, I mean, you know, I take local honey for it, which Tony Landman, my composer friend, said in a coaching on Monday, he said, that's bullshit. It doesn't work. But what do they know? He's, you know, so it worked for me. A girl told me to do it once. A pretty girl. So I did it. And I did it. And I did it consistently last spring. And it works. Little dab of local honey, get whatever the pollen is. I don't know what it is. Is it like a, what would you call that? Is that a vaccine? God, that word's so loaded right now. Anyway, I better get going with it. Here is my interview with the magnificent Dale Cavanaugh.
When I was studying, I met Oscar Gilia. We all know Oscar Gilia.
We all do.
A big inspiration for me, and taught me a lot. And I met him at the Banff Center. It's a place where we had many summer master classes when I was a student. And when I finished my bachelor's, I asked if I could study my graduate studies with him. So I went to Switzerland, and he was in Basel, which is German Switzerland, and I was there for 3 years, and I was also there before in the summertime for master classes in Kijana, and where I met Adam, who was one of your teachers, wasn't he?
That's right. How did you know that? Oh, you must have done a little research.
I just looked you up, boy.
That's right. Adam was my guy. That's right. Back in the day, he was my
undergraduate.
Oh,
we all had those were very fun, exciting, adventurous days in our summer master classes. And and then I ended up deciding to stay in Europe. I sort of got involved in the scene in Europe and decided that it's a good place to be. And I've been teaching at a university in Germany for 25 years.
What university is that? Which one is?
Musikhochschule Detmold.
Well, what does that mean in English? Canadian English or American
that
English,
means you choose. University of Detmold. Detmold is the town of the city, which is a very, very beautiful music university. I guess it would be like, it's Curtis, more like conservatory. It's another system than in the States. It's not totally connected with the university. It's connected with another university if you want to do musicology and things like that. But the performance part of these universities are their own separate institutions.
When did you start performing? What's your earliest sort of situation with that in Canada? How did that come about? Can't remember.
I picked up the guitar and started playing. My brother's a guitarist. He was a big inspiration, you know, the big brother thing. And my cousin played ukulele, which I just thought was amazing when I was 5 or 6, which it is. A great ukulele player is a great ukulele, great musician. So I was inspired by my big cousin and my big brother. But I actually started with piano and clarinet. And were more serious about them until into my teens. And I played guitar, but I didn't take it so seriously until my mid-teens. Yeah. Piano and clarinet, I started very young and played in your jazz band, your symphonic wind ensemble, and all of those things, which I think helped me a lot for the guitar later.
Yeah, I think the people that started on, especially the piano, seem to be pretty comfortable once they move over to the guitar. It seems like the, you know, it's a lot of transferable skills, especially with reading music and stuff like that. Those guys,
things like that, you know,
things like that, little things like that. Right. All those things that I didn't. So I had to like struggle with it. You know, I had to play a lot of catch up.
It's more abstract. I always had a keyboard. As I started playing the guitar, I always still had a keyboard in my mind.
Yeah.
Even when I memorized scores on the guitar, can you imagine? Memorize a score, you know, your right hand, your left hand, whatever, Bach, whatever. But in my mind, if you look at your visual, what's going in your head, I still have a keyboard. That's for a long time, which I didn't find a bad thing, actually.
Well, do you play piano still, or do you just?
Oh no, I'm terrible. No. Why? I you know, I can do what one needs to do on a keyboard, but. I'm a guitarist.
When you decided to do the guitar, your older brother was probably playing rock guitar, though, right?
He was probably rock and jazz. And he went down to L.A. where he was for quite a few years in Detroit and playing more L.A. jazz, Lee Ritenour, Larry Carlton kind of style. And I really loved that. Don't forget, this is the, you know, 70s, 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. it's crazy that it's a while ago now. You know, when you ended up taking on the guitar, did you take it on in a classical way with a classical teacher up there in Nova Scotia? And how did that come
about? Yeah, well, yes. Well, yes and no. No, I mean, in high school, I also played electric jazz guitar in the high school jazz band and steel string. I also played that. And then there was a teacher at a school here who immigrated from Holland. And he had a professorship here in Nova Scotia, and he had followed Segovia all over the world. And he brought the classical guitar to Nova Scotia, really. And it became one of the, we had a very good and enthusiastic class. It was 25 classical guitar students at the university in Halifax. His name was Carole McPhailan, and he's still around, but he's not teaching anymore. So just by pure luck, here in Nova Scotia, there was a complete classical guitar fanatic who had had numerous master classes with Segovia and was in the whole European scene. But he met a Nova Scotia woman and married her, and she convinced him to come and live here by the sea because he also loved his yacht.
So he had a yacht and a classical guitar.
You know, what
those two things don't go together.
It still was a very economical place. Come to Nova Scotia, you can have a beautiful piece of land, you can have a yacht, and you can teach guitar. Woo!
Right, as opposed to being in an apartment in Italy or something like that.
Right.
So that's incredible.
Exactly. So that was his inspiration to come to Nova Scotia, his wife and the boat.
Well, and look what comes out of these situations.
And you know, he brought a whole new idea and scene to this place. And there was a guitar society here at that time. It was extremely active. Anyone who went and played in the guitar societies around Canada and the States would also come to Halifax. So it wasn't that we were in the boonies of the world. It was quite connected to what was from the classical guitar scene in Canada anyway at that time.
Yeah. I mean, it must have been sort of central on
the pure luck, you know, a lot of things that happen in our lives or roads that we make our luck, but some things were in place. Like he just happened to decide to live in Nova Scotia. If he hadn't lived in Nova Scotia, I would never have become a classical guitarist.
That's amazing.
Right?
Yeah, that's true. No. Yeah. I mean, exactly.
If he hadn't met that woman, Rilda. he would not have come.
Was she from Canada, or her name was?
She's from here. Yeah.
What's going on? What kind of who sort of immigrated from Europe to Nova Scotia? I mean, I know we know about probably just Vikings in the beginning, but you know, what about after?
Well, of
what's
course, there were the English and the French, and then there was a terrible, terrible thing that happened in the late 1700s when the French were expulsed. They were kicked out of Nova Scotia and sent down to Louisiana. Mm. They all went down to the States, but they were right here about 7 kilometers from where I'm sitting right now is where they put all the French people on the boat and kicked them out. And they went down to the States many hundreds of years ago.
They just kicked them out. But then after,
we have Acadia, we have French here and English, but immigrants also German, a lot of Germans, but mostly Scots and British people, Irish, Kavanaugh.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, you know, as far as kind of what happened after that, you then sort of start doing these, what I'm assuming are like the Gilia master classes and stuff like that when you're, you know, getting up there with the guitar. So you immediately kind of get put into this more or less a collegiate setting with this guy.
Yeah. Well, I'm also, this is a small town in Nova Scotia, but it's a university. So the campus of this, the university, it's Acadia University, is approximately 100 meters from this house. So I'm right on campus. And I grew up here being a campus kid, right?
Yeah.
So this is just a little island in an educational institution where they always had a very fine, very high class fine arts series. And everything I needed growing up was in this town. Even though it's a very, very, very small town, you know, it's, I think, 8,000 people. It's only the university.
Oh, my gosh. That's 8,000
people. And it's a small university. But it had, you know, the funding for very good arts programs and the things one needs. Very idealistic, actually. A little dream. That's what I grew up in.
It seems like a little dream. Yeah, exactly. A little college town, which is so, those are so important and sort of formative when you're dealing with these sort of isolated areas.
Well, when you're, especially when you're interested in something in the arts,
right.
Because I find North America as opposed to Europe, and in Europe, I find the arts, music, and it's alive in the smallest village everywhere. And you don't have to go more than 12 kilometers in any direction. And you have some great artistic something happening, whether it's visual arts or performing arts, dancing, whatever you can imagine. And here, or also in the States, even though the States, you have a much larger population, but it's still sort of islands throughout, just simply because of geography. Our countries are so huge. So it can't be any other way at this point.
Yeah, and I think it's also just sort of baked into the sort of institutional way that the cities are laid out. Even in New York, there's Lincoln Center, and then if you go outside of Lincoln Center, there's no classical music anywhere. So it's just sort of, you know what I mean?
That's different in Europe. There's classical music everywhere. And
that's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, and that's why I decided to stay. I made the conscious decision. It wasn't like I want to make it in Europe. I just want to survive. I can survive as a musician at just about any level and have a very fulfilling life. My life in Germany has been pretty busy. I really haven't had time since my career took off and teaching and playing solo and duo. And we also have a quartet, and I wanted to raise my daughter and be there as much as I could and teach, you know, I had to really stay focused on projects, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. So there wasn't much time to go to the right or the left in any way.
Right. I mean, that's sort of
so far, but it's not over yet.
Well, and definitely you are someone who has done a lot. Like we talked about before we went on air, we were talking about your compositions, you're talking about your arrangements. You're in the Amadeus guitar duo, which is sort of which is its own beast, I'm sure, as far as concertizing and recording is concerned.
Yeah.
And what is your relationship with him, with Thomas? How did you guys meet?
My husband.
He's your husband? I didn't know that. It doesn't say that anywhere. I
swear. Doesn't happen.
We're just supposed to assume. And he's German. So that's part
he's
of the,
my
the
German husband. Yes. Yes.
he's my German husband. I didn't know that. I'm sorry. I don't keep up with the pop with the TMZ of classical. What's that?
We've been together over 30 years, 32, something like that. Long time.
And so how did you guys meet? Did you guys meet at those classes and stuff?
No.
All right.
We met. He hired me.
Okay.
I was living in Cologne, and at the beginning of my career.
Yeah.
Doing my things, and I just finished competitions, and I've been invited to some festivals, and was just playing around, finding my way, and doing some teaching in a school. And he had had another guitar duo that they decided they didn't want to continue working together anymore. And so they had 80 concerts. And so what they decided the politically correct thing to do is split 50-50, and each one would have 40 concerts. But then all of a sudden, neither of them had a duo partner. So someone recommended me to him, and he literally called me up on the phone and asked me if I would be interested in having 40 concerts, duo concerts, and if I could play this, all these different pieces on a program. And of course I said, of course I can play all those pieces, which I couldn't, but you always say yes, right?
I guess you do. Yes, you do.
Well, you don't always say yes. Excuse me.
Yeah, I believe that was a Bud Light advertising campaign that went wrong, but go ahead.
No, but anyway, so we started, we had a couple rehearsals. We didn't get along so well the first day, but we got through it.
What happened? And, what happened on the first day? That's.
Well, he's a very strong personality, and I guess I could be an emotional person at times.
Okay.
And so we just had a difference of opinion, and I just got so mad at him, I just got up and walked out the door. Soon enough of this. But then we got through. We decided to sit down and talk it out, and then we had another rehearsal, and then we started playing concerts, and we were playing concerts for approximately a whole year before we became a couple, I might add.
Yeah, you were professional.
We were professional. And then it seemed to be a very good idea to have a relationship and right. A profession. And then we had a child. Yeah. So we've been married and together for many years. And our daughter's 25 years old.
So she's an adult. She's doing her own thing. You guys fall in love a year later after, you know, a couple of fights or whatever. But that's the way it is with a duo. I was in a duo too for about 3 years. And it is. I can't imagine doing it with someone who was single and I'm single and not falling in love with them, because there is that sort of connection. Like when you're playing with somebody that much and traveling with somebody that much, it's just not going to be effective unless there's some sort of like deep emotional strain right. between the two of you. I don't like seeing true. Duos That's- of people that don't play with each other all the time. It doesn't do it for me.
That you are right there. And if you're going to like an ensemble, like also string quartets or
right.
People that really decide to have a career together, it's not that you have to then get married. Right. Of course not. But it is like a marriage, whether you never, you know, even if you have your other life and other relationship, that ensemble is a very, very strong relationship, because you're sharing you're not just sharing a couple rehearsals and musical ideas together. You're sharing the growth of your ideas together, and you're fighting for your rights.
You
know?
Yeah.
And it's interpretation of every human being is always, always different.
It is always so crazy.
So subtle maybe, but it's always, there's always something. And of course, that's what's great about ensemble music of any level is exchanging and working together and coming to a result. But when you're a long time ensemble together, then it's like a marriage, and we just happen to be married on top of it.
Well, that's great, and I'm glad it worked out, because I, you know, that was the thing, is with a lot of people are like, oh well, why would a band break up? Why would the Beatles break up? And I'll tell you why. It's just because, like you said, you can agree on some things, but when you're dealing with that many acute decisions, and we're talking about, oh, I want to take this summer off. Well, you can't. I want to play this summer. I want to interpret this phrase with a slight retard at the end. Well, that's stupid. I don't want to do that. It's just constant.
Are you crazy? That's so wacky.
It's gonna, we're gonna sound like clowns. No, we're not.
Sound like the machine. What is that?
Especially when you're young and you're
eight. You first. Feel, just yeah, imagine.
So it's really, I think that, you know, yeah, sort of people should understand how hard that is, and I want to be the first to congratulate you and Thomas,
yes,
on making that
very
work.
Much.
And so where is he now? Is he in Germany, or is he
Thomas
with you?
Is in Germany right now. You know, we also have this guitar. Do you know the Iserlohn Guitar Symposium? Guitar festival in Germany? Iserlohn, Germany?
I don't know it, because I live in a turtle shell. I don't really,
okay.
Yeah. I do this, and I play my music, and then I watch baseball, and that's it.
But that's fine. It's all good. But we've also almost as long as we've been together, we started a very small guitar festival, and it's grown. It's also 31 years old, and I thought maybe you might have heard of it, because we always have, some regular guests like Bruce Holtzman and Tom Johnson from the American part. And Steve Robbins.
I bet I would. Yeah. I haven't done that thing with the South over here with the Southern guys for a long time. It's been about 20 years since I was down there. But teaching over the last couple of years, you feel like right now is sort of a big boom?
I think the last 20, 25 years has had this major growth in numbers of high quality young players. And yeah, that's how I feel.
Yeah, definitely. And especially in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in the States too, in Europe, in the States with the GFA and all the different other things that have been going on, it's, slowly but show everything, the world is the whole planet is classical guitar crazy.
Yeah.
Maybe not the whole planet, but my world.
your world again, in Germany and stuff.
My little world.
Also the well, the USA, yeah, I mean, you're right, with the GFA becoming what it's, I mean, becoming what it's become.
And other, there's many other festivals in the States, so much more than when I started. There were only like three or four festivals in the world that you would go to. The Toronto, I think there was Rio and Paris. And then there was Havana in the 82, and that started, and, you know, just, but then now there's thousands, literally thousands of guitar festivals worldwide, I think.
Yeah. Well, there are.
Maybe it's in the hundreds, but it might be close to 1,000, a little more. Who knows?
There's a lot of entrepreneurs out there doing it too. You know, we got to create our own job for all the good that's coming out of so many people playing guitar. There's a lot of competition as well. So I think people are having to move to more distant areas and create these festivals in order to stay afloat, because they can't get the jobs in the traditional cities and markets.
But what happened, what would have happened with the violin and the piano in previous times? It's, you know, except we're the ones that have our own little exclusive little bubble festivals everywhere.
Right.
That's a little different.
yeah, that's right. It's cool. It really is sort of a testament to our will to survive.
That's right.
As far as... musically speaking, you know, you have a career that spanned, from a recording standpoint, it looks like about 30 years, right? What was your first recording experience for like a full length solo guitar recording?
That was, I think it was 89.
And what was it?
It was called Lyric and Class. virtuosic guitar.
Lyric and virtuosic guitar
like
music.
That, yes. Oh, goodness.
No, that's yeah. Okay. I don't remember some of the pieces I played. I hear them and I go, I know I played that for a year and I forget what it is.
Right.
That, it yeah. just happens. So you start with that, and then what's on that album? Well, I won't ask you that. I'll just take a look here. But you've got...
No,
you got Berkeley. You've got.
I have Cooperman, Larry Cooperman, Walking on Water.
Right.
And yeah, Berkeley Sonatina, and the Invocación and Dance and Tres Piezas, maybe the first time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I mean I don't know how many CDs I have. We made a lot with the duo. We made quite a few concertos. We've premiered. I don't know how many, many concertos, and recorded quite a few. So we have lots of CDs, and then the different companies re-release them and make different combinations. And, you know, but from actual CDs, I think there's, at least 2022.
That's an amazing amount.
I mean, it is. And when I was younger and I heard of someone say, oh, I've made 20 CDs, I was like, wow. But now, I mean, I've been doing this for 30 years.
Right. Yeah.
So that's not that many.
It still is because I think a lot of people, you know, unless they're getting the kind of, support that a David Russell is getting or something, financially, like these are all labors of love, you know what I mean? And so it's really cool. And especially
no, we've been with companies that have taken care of us, good recording companies that have taken care of us.
You've had, you're with Naxos and.
And before that we were with Hensler, which is a very fine German classical company. They did the first recording of everything Bach ever wrote, which hadn't ever been done before. And they did lots of very idealistic projects in the classical music scene. And we loved being with them, but then it was time to move on. We went with Naxos, and we're very satisfied with them too now.
Yeah. So. Well, and they're up there. They're up in Canada, aren't they? They're in the north.
Well, yeah, but I'm connected to the German and Hong Kong connection of Naxos. Not the Canadian, actually. Norbert Kraft is in Toronto, but actually, I mean, Norbert's a great guy. I think he's a wonderful. He's also a fantastic guitarist. But we don't do anything through Norbert. We're through a German connection.
Well, yeah. So they were the ones. What'd you say? The Hensler? Is that how? Am I saying it right?
Hensler. Yeah.
Hensler. And so they're the ones that did that giant box set that came out in the late 90s. Is that what I'm thinking?
Yes, that was them. Yeah.
Oh, I remember that. I remember eyeing that and just wanting that so bad. And now we just get it for free.
Oh, I know. But that's just so terrible.
It's awful.
It's just so terrible.
It's the worst. I remember just coveting
it. It's the biggest crime in the in the 21st century. I mean, to musicians and artists, it's really absolutely no one makes a cent anymore.
Not on their recording.
But you have to do it to keep saying, hello, I'm still here, I exist. And you have to do it to have projects to fulfill your need as an artist, you know? I think the abuse is it's not good. But still, I mean, Naxos is still making CDs, which we can still sell in concert. When the concerts come back.
When the concerts come back. And so, you know, as far as like that's concerned, yeah, that is sort of your outlook, is that this is a bad thing that we can't make money, because that is the case. If someone does want to support an artist, they have to now reach out and directly. I mean, I have people going like, is there any way? And I'm like, I don't know. You can just Venmo me. I'm like, there's. You know, I had an album that came out in the summer, and it just goes into the ether. You just throw these things out there, because when it comes down to it, we are artists.
It's not a bad thing, because then we reach the whole planet. You know,
that's what I like about it. Yeah.
There's good and bad to everything, and we also have to follow technology in the world. You have to go with it. But there has to be a new solution for artists, musicians of different kinds to financially be treated well. I'm thinking of the next generation, not myself so much, you know. It's you can compare it to when the photocopy machine was invented, and then, you know, so the streaming, we can't stop the streaming. The streaming has advantages, but it used to be that we would actually earn money with our CDs in the beginning, and that's
gone. It's completely gone. And it seems like what I see with the young, like really young guitarists right now, is that they are kind of becoming more and more dependent on social media and advertising YouTube, through social media, Instagram. TikTok, so you've got these people. Right. And then that brings a whole new element of, certainly some of those people are really amazing. Like you're saying, kids these days, for all that we can say negatively about them, they are better guitarists than there were when I was a kid. There's just way more of them. And they're maybe all Instagram.
And also the development of the cash from the click.
Right.
The cash from your million clicks. So if you can, so the social media is the way that everyone, I suppose, has to go, as the new generation, the young generation for sure.
Well, the problem with that is, go ahead.
No, I'm listening.
Oh, no. No, I just think that tell you what the problem is. I have the same problem with this show. It's the problem with our industry in that sphere is that sphere doesn't even begin to generate revenue until you are in the millions. And we just aren't, that's not what we do. Like, no, I've got this show,
it does as well. Guitar, right?
It's not what we do. It's not how we make money. So that sort of is the problem, is that realistically, is there a single classical guitarist without the help of some sort of conglomerate that's getting millions of followers, you know, for the right reasons? I mean, I don't know. It just seems like that, as opposed to I release an album, people like the album, so they buy it. We're really, you know, in a tough space here when it comes to selling our recordings.
And the other thing, the thing about social media where I have a bit of a problem, like when you make a CD, very often you want to read the CD notes to know something about the composer or something about the interpreter or something. And most of these things, you learn absolutely nothing. You go to Spotify, you listen to a piece, it's great, you love it, but I guess you could go to Wikipedia and look up what it all was about, but I don't know if you can do that either.
No, in some cases you can't.
You'd buy a CD, you'd read the CD, and you'd listen to the CD or the record or the cassette or whatever it was at the time. But we just have to adjust to things going forward and figure out the next plan.
Yeah, we do. Well, I mean, you know, we're looking back at this too. Let's look back even further at maybe musicians were thinking, well, now there's recordings that are available. People are going to be able to listen to music everywhere. And I mean, it must have had an adverse effect on the salons and stuff that, you know, people would sort of visit nightly to get their musical fix. And now you can just get your musical fix with a recording. So, you know, back then it was a problem.
But, oh, and I'm from the generation where my first CDs, first few CDs were, you know, with tape, you know, the recording tape that you cut when you did an edit and then you taped it together.
Did you do that? You were around for that?
I was.
That's really hardcore, and there must have been some big mistakes that happened with that.
There was somehow I enjoyed the sound and the whole experience much better. There was something I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of people listening, they didn't even realize that that was.
And you really want, we really searched and searched and searched for the perfect space for acoustic and sound. Whereas most people record in some kind of studio now, and the machines to make the sound of the room are just so advanced that you know, you don't necessarily have to go to the perfect space anymore.
Yeah, so a lot of like just sort of the...
No, the adventure isn't... It was an adventure. It was, oh, let's see if I can find a nice castle with an amazing sound.
Right. That was a fun way to spend your afternoon.
Right.
Like castle hunting. You know, I'm old enough to remember doing that, a lot of like gymnasiums and stuff and going.
Well, you can, of course, still do that. And we still do that, but not, you sort of had to when I first started recording. Yeah.
It's, well, you know, one of my favorite recordings of yours and my favorite recording of yours is sort of the one with the Chaconne by Domeniconi and the Preludes by you and the Etudes by you. That's it was really sort of formative to me, especially you as a composer, which, you know, I don't think we get enough of. You know, these are just absolutely beautiful pieces. And, you know, I know that people are starting to play them now, especially now that people are starting to look for more music by female composers. You're becoming quite the go-to, and not for no reason. These are outstanding. And when I heard them way back in the day, by back in the day, I mean 2007, if you can believe that that's way back now, which it is. Some of these guitarists we're talking about were born then. So, you know, we're looking at these pieces. And when I first heard this album, it was really inspirational because you're writing total music. You're employing, you're doing everything that I do is sort of based on, well, I don't want to say based on what you did, but is based on sort of a similar, what I think may be a similar approach, which is I'm going to go tonal. I may go atonal if I want to. I'm going to employ a lot of traditional guitar techniques to what I'm doing. And then I'm going to be extremely fluid in my harmonies and sort of try to, you know, make beautiful things happen. They're really outstanding. And how did you sort of, did you start by composing for the guitar? Like what's been your voyage as far as that stuff is concerned?
I didn't start by composing, although I always, you know, since I was a little child, I wrote songs and diddled on different instruments and, you know, just wrote little things. And it just started to grow. Do you know, I have a CD coming out on the 21st of May, actually, is the release.
Well, that's what we're talking about. That's yeah, for sure.
It's Dale Kavanagh Plays Dale Kavanagh. So it's only my compositions, this CD. But what it is, it has a few of, you know, some of the older pieces from other CDs, and it has some new compositions too, because I wanted to make it, I'm looking at it as volume one, mm-hmm. yeah. And then I'd like to do more in the future, but I thought I'd put the ones that I have previously done and new ones together. So it's one complete CD of me playing my music. I've always played around. I have great admiration for very serious interpretation of Bach with all of the following all the rules and performance practice and all of that. But I also have another whole side that has a huge fascination with improvisation and people that could improvise like Roland Dians and Carlo Domeniconi. They were very, very important to my musical development also. There's many kinds of ways to be a classical guitarist or to be a musician, but I just love both. And for quite a long time, when I wanted to be a serious classical guitarist, I did not dare to let anyone know I would ever write music, because I thought, well, no one will ever take me seriously. How dare I? And it was a big fear. And then I started like step by little bits to show this piece and this piece in a program. And then I still have never made it a major part, because I need my classical part and, you know, the duo, all the things that I have make my world happy. But the composition side is growing actually more as I get older and I have more commissions, and I'm having a really good time composing. It's just really fun and almost kind of therapy for me. I would almost call it therapy, musical therapy. Yeah, to escape from everything and just go into this world. So, and then that whatever comes out, comes out. And I think you explained it very well, how you explained it. I use traditional guitar. I don't go to avant-garde, but who knows, that might happen too someday, because it's not that I haven't played a lot of that music, a lot of music, experimental, all kinds of things. Maybe certain things will happen in time, but I haven't had much time, in all honesty, to compose, because I've been so busy. But whenever I have free time, I'm working on some fun idea.
So I'm really excited about that CD then. I assume that's going to include the preludes and the etudes. And then, like you said, you compose some new pieces. What are the new pieces?
Two impressions that I wrote for Hillary Field. Hillary Field is from Seattle. She's a guitarist that I met when I first started, my first master class. We roomed together. And so, and she's been very active in classical guitar in Seattle and as a performer and teacher in the state. So it's a piece written for her, two pieces. And I don't know what's on that CD.
you're busy. Funday, yeah.
About a piece about the ocean here, the Bay of Funday. A lot of things really are influenced by nature and where I grew up. Also Briny Ocean, which is also about Nova Scotia. It uses a Nova Scotia folk theme, Farewell to Nova Scotia. It's a little theme in the middle. Etudes, Preludes. Going Nowhere is a piece about going nowhere. Just some things. I have so much. It's just not complete. That's why I need volume two. I wrote a piece that I like quite a bit called Tales of Greifenberg. But I couldn't fit that on CD. That's too full. So I'm really working on the next, and I have a whole pile of things I want. But I actually want the next CD. Hopefully I want to find some maybe ensembles for not just solo Dale. Be nice to have some. Maybe my husband will play duo with me, or maybe someone else will play duo with me, and I could do a Dale and Friends CD. But I like this composition thing. It's quite fun.
Yeah, well, it is, and it's much needed, and especially for the kinds of pieces that you're writing. And like you said, you can always go into different areas and grow as a composer. It's fun. It's almost like, we study these people, our entire lives, and then to sort of just try and at least kind of, become one a little, if for a little bit. It's just, it's the best. So, well, you got the album coming out on the 21st of May.
That's when Nexus is releasing it in Germany. I don't know when the worldwide release is. I actually don't know if that's Germany or worldwide, but you can see there's excerpts already on YouTube and Spotify, and everything is advertising cuts are out and about. So, but I don't, I think the 21st of May is probably the general.
That's incredible. So what a great time to talk to you then, because it just perfect. Works out. Look at that. I just reached out to you. I was just talking about you with another guest, and I was like, I can't believe I haven't interviewed her. But it's been wonderful talking to you. Is there anything else that you wanted to sort of throw in here, or do you feel like we got it all?
I think that's all. That's all for today.
I think that's all for today, too. Well, thank you so much. It was an honor speaking to you.
No, it's great to meet you.
That does it for my time with Dale Kavanaugh. Please go to brettwilliamsmusic.com/support. And like I was saying at the beginning of the show, sort of a new thing. I'm just going to reach out to you guys in the next couple episodes about supporting the show while promoting your projects. Just give me a ring, brettwilliamsmusic.com, and we'll see about setting you up with a little spot in the intro. Like you've heard periodically. I think the last one was William Kenningeiser talking about Road to the Sun by Pat Metheny. You can do that too. Anybody can do that if you pay. It's not that much money. I swear to God. I mean, I'm going to charge Bill Ken and Geyser more than I charge you. Maybe it's for free. I'm not telling you. Probably won't be free. Anyway, Brett at BrettWilliamsMusic.com to promote your projects. Next time, we're going to have Alexandra Whittingham, someone who's just getting her career started. She's releasing her debut recording of music from the 19th century at the end of the month, about the same time that Maestro Kavanaugh is going to be having her release. So I'll see you guys real soon.